Oh, here it is. Ed Said, the podcast of Ed Says. Just a few bits from today's show, including a talk with a guy who specializes in first ladies. Really interesting conversation. I've made it clear before how I feel about it. I elect the president, not their spouse. I don't care if it's a first husband, a first lady, a first dude, whatever. But they are given latitude, and that latitude has expanded over the years. Most recently, as you saw Hillary Clinton take charge with healthcare plans for children and how that grew. And of course, as she eventually ran for president of the United States, she had her own political career after being first lady. And it's an interesting talk. And you can land either way. Again, I land on the side of I voted for one person, one position. I don't want their family. I don't want their spouses having any sort of control. And I'm sure lots of people disagree with me. Is it fair? No. I don't. But isn't it? You know, you don't get a promotion at work and your spouse gets the same promotion in that business, or they don't get any say in that business. I don't know. I don't have it all figured out, but I think that we should just, I get the social part of it, like with Michelle Obama and the lunches and Nancy Reagan and the don't do drugs, which of course that turned out to be a bad idea. Not doing drugs, but wrapping marijuana up into that. But that's a whole nother ball of wax. But it's a really interesting conversation. Here is Ed Said for today, November 14th, 2016. In just a moment, we will be joined by Andrew Oak. He's an award-winning TV producer of the C-SPAN series First Ladies, Influence and Image, which talks about first ladies from Martha Washington to Michelle Obama. Also the author of Unusual for Their Time, On the Road with America's First Ladies. Obviously an expert when it comes to the first ladies. And the discussion will be about what kind of first lady can we expect Melania to be. Whether or not we're looking at an activist one or more of a traditional role. So as soon as we have Andrew on the line, we will be speaking with Andrew Oak about that. I have made mention of my stance on it many, many, many times as far as how involved first ladies should be. Because, and this was a concern with Hillary, had she won, with Bill, you are voting for the president. I don't want their spouses. I don't want their kids, which we're going to see with Trump, involved. Because guess what? I didn't vote for them. And any sort of nepotism is always dangerous. Cronyism, like, we need to rethink this whole thing. And there are plenty of first ladies who have been championed for their movements. And I'm not necessarily against them. But when we're, there's one thing to be championing certain things like Michelle Obama with kids eating healthy. That's great. Using your position for that. But if we're talking about policy, I mean, Hillary Clinton was helping form policy when she was first lady. And I do have issue with that. Not that they're not capable, but that's not the job. Again, my wife's an accountant. If she does your taxes, you want her doing them. You don't want to think that I do them. And, oh, no, it's fine. We're married. It's cool. No. She went to years of school and has been doing it for years to become an expert in the field. I can operate a calculator. That's about the extent of my experience. And that's kind of what you want. So I'll be asking Andrew about that and what he thinks Melania's role will be in this White House, whether or not it will be more of a traditional role or a very active role in policy. And joining us now is Andrew Oak, the award-winning TV producer of the C-SPAN series First Ladies, Influence and Image. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ed. How are you?
Doing well. I was just talking about my beliefs as to the role of the First Lady and kind of what it has become. I was just saying that I vote for the candidate, and my fear was had Hillary won and Bill's influence on her as a former president. When did it become for the First Lady to become more active, not only on social things like Michelle Obama was with kids eating better, but Hillary Clinton, where we're talking helping write policy?
Well, it's been happening for a lot longer than we think. I mean, we look back to some of the very obvious ones, the very public ones like Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt was the the literal legs of her husband having polio and being wheelchair bound, and she went out in the field because she wanted to be out in the field. She wanted to do that recon stuff for him, and he was elected to an unprecedented, you know, four terms. Didn't live out his last term, but she remained very active. And going back even further, or I mean, right after that, Bess Truman was in on some very, very high level discussions and policy. I don't know that she, you know, she didn't make policy like publicly like we know like a Hillary Clinton did or things like that. But you go back to Edith Wilson. Edith Wilson looked over the White House and the administration while Woodrow Wilson was recovering from a stroke, and the country didn't even know. They just told the country that he was exhausted and needed to rest, and people accepted that back then. So these women, I mean, from the very beginning, they've been the most powerful unelected female women, spouses, in the world. And as America grew as a superpower, so did their influence and what they did behind the scenes. We're just starting to learn and know how much some of these women have influenced their husbands' administrations.
And when it comes to Melania, what do you think her role will be? Because she's coming in from a unique perspective. She is the first foreign-born FLOTUS in 191 years. As these notes also say, wife number three, which divorce is not uncommon, but three is a new high water mark.
It is, and presidents have been divorced back to Harding and other things like that. So I mean, again, not unprecedented, but unusual in three. And she is, she's the second foreign born first lady, and the first was Louisa Catherine Adams, born in London in 1775. And there was great concern, mainly from Adams's parents, former President Adams and Mrs. Abigail Adams, that a foreign-born wife would hurt him politically. We've branched out more since then, and I think that this can even help and help someone who did, you know, cause some divide and make some statements that has created some enemies and some problems for him politically. I think Melania Trump stands to help her husband's administration as she takes on a more traditional role. She can soften Donald Trump. She can do things like Dolly Madison did for her husband. Her husband, James Madison, was all business and not very friendly and not a big socialite. And Dolly Madison threw the best parties in Washington, D.C. and put people together at the table that wouldn't normally have been together. So I think publicly, Melania Trump stands to soften Donald Trump in the eyes of his detractors and just boost him up further in his supporters, because she makes him more human. She makes him a family man. She's his wife. They have a child together. She's young. She's attractive. She has international appeal and speaks multiple languages. And as she really sort of blazes her own path and cuts her own way through her first lady's role, I see that being a huge asset to the Trump administration.
And one thing that just dawned on me that's amazing to me is that, you know, you said they're married, they're together, they have the child. But that tape from Access Hollywood came out while she was pregnant. That incident happened while she was pregnant with that child. And it seems as though, like, that everybody kind of just overlooked that and said, oh, it happened, it's over and done with.
Well, the public is strange, and the public is fickle, and the public sometimes has a very, very short memory. I mean, this, as one administration gets treated one way, another administration can get treated another way. Here's an example that, you know, first ladies and administrations have been choosing White House China since the Monroe administration. It's the first administration to have official White House China. And then you come along in the early 80s and Nancy Reagan gets some new China and people go crazy. They think, what are you doing? What are you wasting all this money? Well, first of all, their rich Hollywood friends paid for the China. It was all the supporters, so it wasn't any taxpayer dollars. B, almost every president has picked his own, you know, president and first lady has had new China anyway. And, you know, it just, it really is strange what catches some people's eye and what doesn't, and when it catches people's eyes.
Now, do you think if she's going to be more of a social, a party maker and a bread breaker, one of those people that gets people together that, you like you said, might not usually, do you think that she will have any influence on policy, or will she strictly stay to the social side? Because I think if, in my opinion, if anybody gets wind, it could be problematic for Trump, although all the rules are out the window. But I think if we hear about her sitting in on high-level meetings, you might hear some people take issue.
I think you're right. You know, there is the stigma that's attached to a supermodel that you might think she's not all that much upstairs, but she does speak multiple languages. She does have that international appeal, but I don't think anyone wants her, you know, trying to figure out how to deal with Putin. But on other issues, that could come in handy, where she takes a stance on immigration, where she has experience coming to the country legally and supporting her husband's stance on immigration. And again, even softening that a little bit, you know, where Donald says, I'm building a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it, and that gets some people upset. Melania could come out and say, look, I know what it's like to come to this country. I know what it's like to go through the legal method. It's okay. We can do things legal. You know, so they can, if they choose the right thing and use her effectively, she will work out very well.
And tell me about the book, Unusual for Their Time.
Sure. I was very fortunate to be part of a production team for the C-SPAN series, Influence and Image. And for that series, I was the producer that traveled the country, getting the stories of the first ladies at all of the different historical locations, birthplaces, museums, libraries, train stations. And when I got done with the series, there was just so much that I'd seen, so much that I'd learned, and I wanted to talk about all of it. So I started doing public speaking at private presidential museums and libraries and historical societies and schools and universities, and there's only so much time in a one-hour speech, and there's only so much time in a 90-minute show, so everything we couldn't fit into the series and everything we couldn't fit into my speaking program, I now write about in the book, and it's a fun journey of just me traveling across the United States, learning about these women that, you know, we really don't know that much about, especially in their pre- and post-White House life, and they're fascinating characters.
Andrew Oak, award-winning TV producer and author. The book is Unusual for Their Time, On the Road with America's First Ladies. C-SPAN series is First Ladies, Influence, and Image. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Last week, post-election, a lot of emotions, and I brought up a story that talked about a professor who gave students a day off from an exam. That professor decided to write about it and say it might have gotten a little bit out of control, saying he teaches introductory microeconomics to Yale undergraduates. It's a tough course where they teach from a textbook for majors and MBAs, and they teach that to freshmen. All the students, including liberals, conservatives, and all walks of life, have to demonstrate the social cost of taxation and the inefficiency of bad regulation. And they learn about inequality, market failures, and optimal regulation. And he goes on to talk about how he had received a lot of emails about people watching the election, staying up. And when that came out, that he had given the opportunity to put off the test because the interim exam was scheduled for the next day. He was happy to hear that the students were not going to bed. They were staying up to date on it. Small numbers of students had emailed concern about personal consequences when it comes to immigrant family students, that their family members might be deported. And then he talks about students who were talking about not much time for sleep. Could we please postpone the exam? I said it was probably bad to schedule the exam for the day after the election, but the exam could not be postponed. And the sun came up, and he sent the students an email reminding them that the great majority of them would actually be better off taking the exam. And as he sat in the room filled up, and everybody showed up for the most part. And apparently, according to everything in the media, this economics professor, special snowflakes, were so upset by the thought of President Donald Trump they couldn't function, and so their idiot professor had made the exam optional. Well, it turns out that wasn't the case, and I bring this because I reported this. He says the student showed up and took the tests. There was no crying, no whining, no excuses. And even though he had extended the offer, people had not taken him up on it. They showed up anyway. And this goes back to where we get our news and following up and digging deeper, and I'm guilty of it there. the storyline was, oh, this sad pants professor lets his kids off the hook. So he made a quick decision to make an offer to everyone, all sides, saying if they were unable to make this midterm for personal reasons, they would transfer the weight of that exam entirely on the upcoming final, which also covers material from the midterm. Taking responsibility for a poorly timed exam and saying, hey, you have the option. Didn't postpone it, didn't cancel it. Just said, hey, you want to skip this one, that's great, but there is a consequence. That last one's going to count as this one as well. Now, me, I would take that every time, even if I hadn't stayed up late. I got more time to procrastinate and have to nail everything on the final? Give me that. But we were so quick to rush to judgment and so quick to condemn these special snowflakes who all showed up for their exam. I think it's important to remember that. That sometimes when we take that headline as gospel, or maybe read the first few lines, and that's it. Isn't always the case. But I think the internet has made us all experts on one thing or another. We're all so smart. We saw something that we agree with, therefore it's fact. And that's not necessarily the case. Anybody who's been in college knows exams can be postponed for any number of reasons. And anything can happen. So I apologize to that professor for doing my part to perpetuate the story that you were making special snowflakes. Because that wasn't the case. And the details are shown, but now it's too late. The vast majority of people who had condemned him as a professor and those students as special snowflakes will never hear the follow-up. Don't care about the follow-up. Because they heard something that they agree with, and therefore, case closed. Done. And that's problematic. And in this world of tweets and Snapchat and Facebook and comments on YouTube and other websites, which are just god-awful, sometimes we got to put in the little extra effort. And we talked about this earlier with an earlier caller. And when somebody disagrees with you on something, do the research. See where they're coming from. Find out why they formulated that opinion. But it takes time. Sometimes I have to put down Plants vs. Zombies Heroes, and I have to actually dig a little deeper on an article, get to know the information a little better. It's not easy. It takes effort. But with all the distractions we have these days, I think we can probably cut back on a few of those and find the information that we're looking for. And that's why, you know, I require you to call, or I ask you to call. I ask you to correct anything that I get wrong. Now, mind you, when doing so, if you misstate the facts, I will call you out on it. But I encourage everyone who has an opinion to call and to have a call like that, like I did earlier, where it's an exchange of thoughts rather than just shouting at one another. Shouting is easy. I will tell you that much. I'm good at it. I can out-yell most people. Plus, I have the microphone, so it makes it a little easier. I have control. Jim will just bring down the phone, and it's just me again. But life doesn't work out like that. So in this time of people saying, support our president, and others saying, not my president, well, we just get a little more informed. How about we take that extra time and just dig a little deeper. Remove yourself from that echo chamber and see if the people you are trusting might be lying to you. Maybe not lying to you, but stretching the truth. We all should have learned from Obi-Wan when he said, what I said was true from a certain point of view. Make sure that point of view isn't skewed. If you don't recall that, you need to brush up on your trilogy history. The trilogy. The only trilogy that matters, the Star Wars trilogy. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. If you've got something you want to talk about, also Twitter at EdSaysCT. EdSays@talkofconnecticut.com is the email. We're talking about the protests, the right to do it, whether or not Connecticut's Linda McMahon will find a home in a Trump administration, and really what protesting is and whether or not if it bothers you, who cares what you have to say? One of the things I saw is, you know, get over it, you lost. And somebody said, well, what do you say to all those who wave Confederate flags? 888-574-2723. Let's go to Dave in Waterbury. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Ed. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I don't understand this. Obama made a whole lot of promises when he took office, and we just went with it. Mr. Trump is our new commander-in-chief come January, and if we don't stand behind the man, then the country's going to fall apart.
Did you stand behind President Obama the same way?
I don't care. You know, when I was in the Marine Corps, it didn't matter who was in office.
No, wait. I asked you, did you stand behind President Obama the same way you want these people to stand behind Donald Trump?
You know, I voted for Obama. I was a Democrat. And come this election, I honestly went with the independent party because I couldn't stand behind either one of them. Because I didn't trust either one of them. But he is our president-elect. We need to stand behind him as a country in order to get through.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I don't fully agree with you. Dave, I thank you for the call. So I don't know if you were hearing my question or answering it. It sounds like as a Democrat who voted for President Obama, you were already backing him. My criticism is to those who are claiming that when President Obama was elected, it was all sunshine and puppy dogs. And it wasn't. There will always be an element that is disappointed with the outcome. And you're seeing that reaction now. And you can agree with it or you can disagree with it. But the best thing about America is that they have the right to do so. When it comes to getting behind our president-elect, I'm iffy on it. I'm not out there protesting for anything. You have to earn trust. You have to earn support. And he does not have mine. Without, you know, indiscriminately, I will obviously be looking at everything and looking at this interview with 60 Minutes. It makes it harder because we continue to see things that are contradictory and it's dangerous. This is not a job, and I'm a firm believer that most jobs, you give someone 2 weeks, they can figure it out. Now, that I don't mean a lawyer or a doctor. Those things do require a lot of education. Nobody's going to do surgery with a quick 2 week class. But, you know, if somebody needed to come in and do my job, they could do it in two. They could maybe not do it well, but they'd learn enough to get by. The President of the United States of America is not a job that you're just going to walk into. And by all accounts, it's going to be overwhelming. The interview was 60 Minutes. Troubles me only because of a few of his plans. Or what he says, like, let's see, as far as his behavior, saying he'll conduct himself in a very good manner. But it depends on what the situation is. Sometimes you have to be rougher. Sometimes you need a certain rhetoric to get people motivated. And I think that's dangerous. And I think we saw that. And this plays into all those fake news articles that people share in emails and Facebook. Rhetoric. These are red flags. Words have meaning. And if you're saying certain rhetoric to get people motivated, that's dangerous to me. Let's go to Bruce in Bristol. Good morning, Bruce. No, sorry, Bruce. To say something, sometimes you need to be rougher and need certain rhetoric to get people motivated. That, for me, as a person who deals in words on a daily basis, and they do have meaning, using certain rhetoric to get a certain result is dangerous. It's called manipulation as well. When he talks about deporting millions of immigrants, says they will first focus on criminals and those who have criminal records, and then they will focus on undocumented immigrants who are, quote, terrific people, but they're going to make a determination after the border is secure. Now, the question is whether it's a wall or a fence or it's a barrier, whether or not he will actually be able to do it. The other thing is, then he addressed his cabinet, or his transition team, excuse me, that's made up of lobbyists and insiders. And Trump says, everybody's a lobbyist down there. That's the problem with the system. We're going to clean it up. They know the system right now. We're going to phase that out. You have to phase it out. So now, rather than blowing it up, he's like, well, we'll phase it out. This is things to keep an eye on. When you blindly support someone, you say, okay, he's going to phase it out and never check back. I think it's important to check back. Let's go to Bruce in Bristol. You're back. Bruce, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Not too bad.
We talked once before, and although we disagreed, it was a great conversation, so thanks. I just wanted to say that, you know, I actually did not. I'm strongly behind Trump. I am so happy he got elected. I think he's so far from perfect, it ain't even real. But when Obama, his first term, when he got elected, I thought it was a watershed moment in American history, and I still do, even though I think he was one of the worst presidents of all time. At the time, hey, we in America finally voted a black American into office. I didn't think it was possible, and I thought it was great. So I know a lot of you talking, you've been asking about that. So I, for one, am one who backed Obama on his first term.
No, that's good to hear, because oftentimes I see people who I've heard from or known, and it's, well, you got to back him now. But do I have to? And are you apprehensive about the promises and what President Trump could deliver? Because I know President Obama, he made a lot of promises too, and then he ran into some issues. And even though Trump has the Republican, it's a Republican government right now, do you think he'll be able to deliver on all of these? Because some are more outlandish than others.
Well, will he be able to deliver on all of them? Not all of them, most of them. You know, I think if you paid attention, which you obviously did, Trump said, what I do is I set the bar really, really high because I know I got to negotiate somewhere back towards the middle. I think you probably heard that from him. But do I have full confidence? No, I never do. I'm more of an independent, you know, and, you know, Obama did not fulfill many of his promises. Most of these guys don't, unfortunately. And I do a small thing on YouTube, and one of the things that I said is the fight isn't even close to over. It's just begun. Now we got to watch them.
Yeah, and I think that's what maybe is being lost with a lot of people criticizing the protesters, is that this blind devotion. No, we need to watch everybody, and we also need to get more involved. Especially when it's talking about that, you know, everybody's a lobbyist in D.C. Well, half of that is our fault, because the people we elect and send there, we keep them there because they're familiar and we like them. And all that does, you know, everybody knows when you've got that guy who's been in the same job for 20 years, he doesn't even really do his job anymore.
Oh, that's, I believe in term limits. Is that what you're hinting at?
Yeah. You need to be cycling through if you're sitting in the same place. And for the private sector, that's one thing, because I hope to settle in to that, you know, and for different
but
jobs.
But even to an extent, like tenured professors are the worst.
Right. When you're somewhere comfortable and you're never being challenged, that's when problems arise, and that's when deals happen.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, though, I think you're leaning a little bit towards criticizing them for not immediately draining the swamp. But it's almost impossible to do, Ed. I think you recognize that. First of all, he needs some people that can help him circumnavigate the waters in there.
But is Bannon from Breitbart really the right guy?
No, I hate that choice. I'll tell you that right now. The only thing I like about him, I did a little research on him, and I don't like the fact that when he was editor-in-chief of Breitbart that he let through a few articles that were basically racist. That's a big issue for me. The only upside is he is anti-establishment, but I would not pick him to run a bowling alley. Okay?
Right.
So that's
the things. There's so many great people in this nation that I think he could look elsewhere and find someone else. And it just seemed too easy. And I don't want him, because of all the rhetoric he spewed, like, I don't want him making the easy choices. Newt Gingrich, Rudy Giuliani, Ben Carson,
I think Newt and Rudy were good choices. You don't?
But they're, well, no. I think they're terrible choices. First of all, Newt has been a problem for the Republicans for years. And
that's why he's a good choice.
But he's entrenched. And I don't, he's a problem for them because of his record. He's the one that cost them all those seats. I don't think Newt is a good choice. I don't think Giuliani is. Giuliani has squandered any goodwill he had.
I love Giuliani. Look, Giuliani reduced New York crime by 65%.
Right. That's great, but that doesn't necessarily translate into what he's going to be doing next.
Well, yeah, but if you listen to him as a Trump surrogate, he was a brilliant pit bull for Trump. He articulated Trump's case better than anyone except for probably Kellyanne McEnerney.
Well, I just, again, I could dig into so many quotes from that guy that just rub me the wrong way.
I believe that. Well, and I'd like to, at some point, I'd love to discuss them with you. But, you know, I think, I know you got to go on to someone else soon, but I would like to agree with your point of the blind devotion. We
right.
can't be blindly devoted to anybody. You know, I always say, like I said, I got a stupid little YouTube show, and I always say, educate yourself. Listen to both sides. I hate CNN, but I listen to them more than I listen to anybody else.
And that's important.
And I listen to Fox, and I listen to shows like yours and everybody else. And hear every opinion you can hear, both sides.
Well, Bruce, thank you for the call. Again, a nice talk. I appreciate it. 888-574-2723. And I think that's something that I ask all of my listeners, whether they do it or not is up to them. But don't live in that bubble. And listen to both sides. Listen more to the people you disagree with, because then that'll help you gain a perspective. And, you know, in conversations, I understand why Trump won. I get it. I know. When it came to the two, way back in January, I said, you know, these are terrible candidates across the board. I was a Sanders guy, mostly for the same reasons people were Trump supporters, because it was something different, saying both with populist messages. I said they're opposite sides of the same coin. And what Clinton did was ignore that. For 8 years, she had time to turn things around. And people didn't want more of the same. You know, I almost look at it, the timeless story of which parent do you want to live with if they got divorced? You know, say mom's the disciplinarian. You know, it's going to be tough. You're going to have rules, but you're going to have meals ready. You're going to get to your schooling events, and you're going to get to your sporting events. And go live with dad, and you're going to get presents every weekend, but you might be making yourself cereal for dinner because dad's late or dad's not responsible. Or vice versa. You can switch the genders. And that's kind of what I'm saying is that with Hillary, we knew we were going to get more of the same. But, you know, she's shady and we've got these issues with her. And then with Trump, I also think with Trump, people let a lot of things go. Like you could print a list of all the things that should have been disqualifying factors and would have been for any other politician. And supporters are willing to overlook it. And I'm not even talking about, I'm talking about the concrete, legitimate stuff, not even the rumors and the lawsuits, whether or not some are frivolous. I'm talking about the hard evidence stuff. There's plenty there that would have kept him from being a politician in any other era. And it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic and a look at the human condition. We chose right now the unknown. A lot of promises were made, but we've chosen the unknown. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out. And like Bruce said, I'm not going to blindly follow. I wouldn't have blindly followed Hillary. I've been critical of her. I've been critical of President Obama. I'm going to be critical of everyone because this is serious business. This isn't rah-rah, go team. Like, that's easy. But you still can be critical and be rah-rah. It doesn't change the fact that I'm an American. I want what's best for everyone in this country. I understand that my interests don't necessarily line up with everybody else's. And that's a hard place to be for some people. They only think about their perspective and their needs.